Fear Not, Episode 83.
Hi, I'm Billy Atwell, and I believe that consistently facing your fears is the only way to realize your truest self and to make those confident choices that will help you to obtain your deepest held hopes and dreams. I have faith that this podcast series will show you that you are not alone, that it will strengthen you and give you courage to face your fears, and that it will help you to permanently cross over into a life of living beyond your fears. Join me on this journey as we listen and learn from others as they share their experiences in facing and overcoming their own fears. Hello, everybody. Today, you and I are going to be joined by Jed Passeras. Hello, Jed. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you. Nice to meet you, Billy.
Jed has inspired and supported others to embrace the full spectrum of their humanity through her writings, workshops, and private practice for over the past 30 years. She is the Nautilus Gold Award finalist for her first book, Undefended Love. Most recently, she has published Hidden Blessings, Midlife Crisis as a Spiritual Awakening. Jed, can you take a few extra moments to fill in those gaps and maybe also give us a brief glimpse of your personal life?
Sure. My personal life on the outer level of reality is that I'm in my 60s. I'm of Greek descent. I'm a second generation American. I was married for 10 years and divorced at 32, and now have been married almost 30 years. And I'm very grateful for that blessing in my life. I live on an acre and a half of land in the San Francisco Bay Area. It's filled with flowers and footbridges and redwood trees, which is what I'm looking out on as we have our conversation today. I have a beautiful kitten named Mystic Grace, who I'm over the moon about, and I enjoy singing. I joined a choral group recently, and I'm just totally loving that. And of course, I'm very satisfied and content, happy with the publication of the new book, which has recently won a couple of awards for spiritual self-help and personal growth. And then on the inner level of reality, or on the spiritual plane of existence, I'm really indebted to many spiritual traditions over the course of my lifetime, beginning with the Greek Orthodox religion of my youth, shamanism, goddess tradition, Buddhism, Taoism, Sufism, Advaita Vedantism, Theosophist, and really many, many others. And I've always resonated more with the esoteric versions of spirituality versus the exoteric forms. So now I'm mostly immersed in the mystical Christian tradition, which actually feels like my true spiritual home.
That sounds so great. And thank you so much for sharing. Jed, can we start off by having you help us to understand what fear is?
Yes, and in that realm, I want to start by saying how excited I was to receive your invitation, because I have long felt that meaningful conversations about fear, which is one of the most difficult of all the human emotions, have been lacking. So to see that you've pitched your tent there was very meaningful and joyful for me. The fundamentalism, aggression, authoritarianism, violence, and unkindness that seems to be just out of control on a planet-wide basis right now makes us all feel like we're living on shaky ground. And I don't know, maybe planet Earth is in its own midlife crisis right now, and midlife is a time when we can feel like we're on shaky ground. So I wanted to start by appreciating what you're doing and saying that it's very necessary, and I'm certainly going to do my best to promote what you're doing to others. This is very, very needed. Also, you know, when you did send the invitation, I did a quick internet research about what the conversations are that are happening. And they mostly have to do with getting over fear, overcoming fear, subduing fear, mastering fear, which I think is a very good acknowledgement of our starting point. We don't want to feel afraid. And that sense of fighting or recoiling from fear is a very natural response, I think, because fear is so uncomfortable. And then continuing with this quick internet study, I noticed that the titles of all the articles were about vanquishing fears. But the content was really about facing fear, which you actually mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, and I see is all over your website. And I really appreciate that vantage point, because facing fear for me is kind of a bridge phase. It acknowledges our starting point, which is primarily ego-based, right? We face down something or face off against something. It's about fighting. But it also has a soulful quality, the other side of the bridge, which means turning and facing what we have been avoiding, turning toward the wave, not away from it. So to emphasize that, I will often say meeting a fear or opening to a fear, or wondering about it or inquiring into it. You see, on the one side, it's primarily adversarial, and on the other side, it's primarily relational. And I think every time we face a fear, we have to take that journey. We start at a reactive level. We have to cross that bridge to find a way to relate to whatever it is we haven't related to. And then the techniques are wide-ranging. I'm sure most of the listeners have heard them. They invite us to stay awake while we're feeling fear instead of denying or avoiding and recoiling it from it. So if we start with the question, what is fear itself? Which is what you mentioned earlier. And why do we feel so uncomfortable? You know, when it kind of feels like it disrupts our everyday flow of life. And the reason fear basically, let's see, it triggers what some psychologists call the alarm reaction. And that now has become the famous fight or flight. But there's really fight, flight, or go numb response. And people have brought in the go numb response. I can explain why. But the alarm reaction itself is a healthy reaction. It mobilizes us physically and cognitively for an action that is oriented toward protecting ourselves from imminent danger. Or in the people version of this, in the absence of actual danger, the presence of like theorized or imagined danger. If I draw on my own personal experience, when I was 19, I was assaulted by two men on the streets of Georgetown outside of DC. I was walking down the street at 11 p.m. when a car pulled up beside me, and I immediately knew it was a dangerous situation. In that moment, I became acutely aware of every step, every vibration, every movement. I could hear the leaves rustling along the sidewalk. And then the assault began, which was where part of me struggled physically, but there was also a part of me that separated out and was making kind of strategic decisions about what to do and how to survive. There was a strand of fear present, but it didn't affect my ability to respond. But for weeks, months, and even years after the assault, the fear I felt afterward was crippling. So the what I'm trying to point out here is that often when an event triggers an alarm response, we respond in a way that is about survival. We respond appropriately. But that third category, that human category, the freeze category, is where we begin to collect similar experiences. And we can collect so many of them, and they don't become dispersed through an activity, that we begin to accumulate an overwhelming amount of backed up fears so that they become kind of trauma sites in our being, in our beings. And we begin to feel more and more immobilized by them. So the actual assault didn't generate fear at the time, but it became a bucket in my life where fear collected around being physically harmed. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Very much so.
Yeah. So I'm kind of making a distinction here between actually having an experience that fear propels us to act in accordance with, and then these other kinds of fears where we're collecting either collective thought forms or stories we've heard or places where we've experienced maybe a smaller level of fear, and then they have collected into these large, overwhelming experiences that we don't know how to deal with them. Now, I think it would be helpful if those who are listening take a moment to recall a time where you really felt scared, or that there's a fear that maybe hasn't happened in your life, but in your mind's eye, it's something you think about. And that would make the conversation we're having more real instead of philosophical. If you recall a time when you were really scared, then you'll notice that your body begins to spontaneously have some experiences. And I mean, common ones are tightness in the chest, queasy feeling in our stomachs, brain fog. Now, as I'm saying this, I'm starting to feel it, trembling lip. So they're very uncomfortable things that they're difficult to feel. And even as we're having this conversation, maybe some people are just feeling that a little bit.
Yeah, I was going to say, whenever I sort of think about those things, I sort of tense up, especially in the shoulders and neck, and I stop breathing.
Yeah, we stop breathing, exactly. And tension, that's great that you mentioned that, because our bodies become contractive for the most part. There are some people who kind of become explosive in the face of fear or become angry in the face of fear. I think the majority of us begin to contract and tense up, almost recoiling inside of ourselves and trying to clamp down on the experience because it's so comfortable, uncomfortable, sorry. And then, you know, common fears, well, most of us are afraid of losing control or humiliation or rejection, death, of course. Going crazy. I don't think that that's mentioned a lot, but actually that's one of the main fears people have, going crazy, incapacity. We're afraid of losing the people we love, like my assault, afraid of being hurt physically, but also emotionally. Illness, we're afraid of intimacy. Many of us are afraid of sexuality. I mean, broadly speaking, we're afraid of other people in general, many of us. So again, if you're listening, you know, what are you afraid of?
Jed, I know in your new book, Hidden Blessings, and in your work in general, you talk about midlife. There's a lot of fear around that. I was hoping that you could help us to understand how that period of one's life should be.
Yeah, well, it actually should be the way we experience it. But the purpose of why it is that way, why it's a necessary period of discomfort, I would like to talk about. Many people call it the mother load of fears because we experience fears almost as an avalanche at certain periods within that time of life. So let me just do a quick cliff notes of what midlife is and then enter into the question you're asking. Midlife is a 10 to 12 year developmental passage. It generally happens somewhere between 40 and 65, although there are many exceptions. And what's happening is this. If you think about your adult life and split it into two sections, you have your first adult life and your second adult life. Well, the first adult life is basically dedicated to fulfilling the social contract. That's to create families and communities, learn to financially support yourself and your family, pay taxes, stop at stop signs. It's, you know, it's whatever was needed in your world to create the civil fabric of society. And the way we fulfill the contract is basically through our personality or social self or ego, if you know that term. It's the self or role we created in childhood to help us survive, get along, and be a member of whatever herd we belong to. Between that first adult life and that second adult life is where the midlife passage is. It's like in the first adult life, we're caterpillars, and in the second adult life, we become butterflies, our unique selves. And in between, there's a cocoon. So thinking back to what I just asked a few minutes ago, what are you afraid of? If you're in midlife, you're afraid of aging. You're afraid of death. You're afraid of incapacity, maybe losing your mind. A lot of us are afraid of dementia, Alzheimer's. We're afraid of losing the lives we've known as parents. We're probably afraid of losing our parents. We might begin to feel useless or unmotivated or dispensable. Remember at the beginning I talked about shaky ground. All of the ego self, the social self, is about building things up and feeling like we're on stable ground. The butterfly self, that's about taking flight, being able to alight onto stable ground, but also take flight. And in between, the cocoon is where we basically melt down all we have been and all we have known. Not all at one time. I don't want to get listeners scared here. It happens in stages and segments, which I outline in the book. But in order to become the butterfly, we have to go through a pretty major transformation. And the difference at midlife is it becomes comprehensive. You can still see the caterpillar in a butterfly, right? But the wings, the beauty, the exquisite detail of the wings of the soul, the butterfly, it kind of captures our attention. But if you look closely, the body of the caterpillar, it's still present, but we have to feel lost and disoriented, empty, lonely. We have to go through those stages in order to emerge into a unique form that has our service and our purpose arising from a deeper well. And I see that well as a soulful one, a spiritual one, where we are joining with the aims of the divine to bring forward something that we really couldn't bring forward under the weight of the obligations and expectations of that first adult life where we were contributing, I said, to the building of society.
Would you be able to explain a little bit more of that, maybe share some of the steps of that process that we could get a deeper understanding of what you're talking about today?
Yeah, happy to. So this is where the whole thing gets very exciting and scary, is that we begin to meet limitations and obstacles. And in our first adult lives, what we would do around limitations and obstacles is we would get around them. We would redouble our efforts. We had a lot of energy, we were motivated to succeed. And failure wasn't something that we spent a lot of time trying to master. And so as our structures, our ego structures, that was the basis that we succeeded and accomplished and did all these things begins to break down, we experience first shock. Disillusionment. This can't be happening. In fact, when I entered midlife, bear in mind, I had been teaching people how to traverse major life transitions for 20 years by that time. When I entered midlife, I was completely shocked that this could happen to me. I thought I had figured this out, how to make transitions smooth and undulating instead of shocking. But I was shocked with the experience of the loss of motivation and the increase in fear and the experience of uncertainty, the lack of confidence. So the first thing is shock. And in the beginning, shock elicits fear. And toward the end of the journey, shock becomes a shock of awakening. It begins to point our attention toward our unfolding edge And it's an invitation toward the divine, toward the spiritual core, the souls of our beings. So it all begins with shock. Shock is a good thing, even though it's disorienting and disruptive. Shock is telling us time to head to the cocoon. And then we feel a sense of unraveling. And the unraveling is we just basically can't do things in the way we once did them. I began not balancing my checkbook. I began missing appointments. I began feeling like I wasn't sure why I would do one thing versus another. And so there's a loosening of self, the loosening of that egoic being that we had created. And then there are something I call uprisings. There are parts of us that have been relegated into the basement of our lives that are now demanding our attention. They want to have space in our psyches and in our lives. They are old paths that need to be revisited. There are joys that were suppressed under obligations and expectations. They are parts of us that weren't invited or welcomed when we were children. They're whatever we disowned, repressed, and suppressed begin to ask for conversation, ask for admission into our lives that were once forced to be kept out of sight. And then after that, generally, we'll go into a period of depression. And I spend a lot of time in that passage at stage four. I spend a lot of time really encouraging people to not see depression in a clinical way. Depression is simply retreating from surface and superficial realities and diving more into our depths, getting to know ourselves below the surface. And for some, that feels very scary. A depression can feel dark and gray, or anxious depression, another form of depression. But again, over time, we see that experience of depression as an invitation to retreat from the busyness of our lives, or to redirect ourselves into that which is more soulful and meaningful. And then at stage five, there's really this amazing phenomenon. I call it opening the spirit door, and it's the first contact we have with that which we don't understand in terms of kind of soulfulness or spirit or the divine. And the first contact can knock our socks off. Some of my clients call it the paradigm-shattering event of midlife, and it comes in all kinds of ways, and it's beautiful countenance. It comes with falling in love, perhaps, and in its they're both challenging. They're all challenging, but more aversive form would be like a cancer diagnosis. It opens us up, cracks us open, really, and forces us to live in two realities at one time. Like when you have a diagnosis, everyone's going about their life, right? And here we are going through tests that are giving us percentages of our possible survival rate and remedies and treatments. And so it stops life flowing in an orderly, controlled manner. It's quite profound. And then stage six, we begin usually by virtue of this cracking open, we begin to see all the ways that we have left life, where we have disassociated or moved away from things that have scared us. And we probably don't have time enough to go through all the stages, but let me speak a little bit more broadly. Is that in stages 7, 8, and 9, we emerge from that melting down, those first six stages, which are the most uncomfortable. We emerge into the light, and we begin to feel an unfolding self that has a vibration and a movement that feels fresh and new and alive and exciting. And we're still asked to dive into places that are unfinished and requesting our attention, but more of the journey now begins to be centered in our soul selves, and we begin to get a new rhythm and a new sense of self, and its wonder is exciting and inviting. And then if we look at stages as a group, 10, 11, and 12, that is where we're beginning to really shift our center of gravity to the aims of the soul and surrender ourselves to living life in a deeply related manner as opposed to an adversarial manner. It's where we cross that bridge we talked about at the beginning, where we're facing down a fear and it's me versus the fear, to seeing the fear as a companion that invites us to see the unfolding edge of our unique selves. So that's a whirlwind tour through the 12 stages. I want to say that these stages do not unfold linearly, but I have found it to be very helpful to clients and readers for them to understand that these fears and shaky ground, disorientation and breaking down, this is a part of a path, and that path is indeed leading somewhere.
Jet, if someone would like to learn more about this process and or connect with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, I have my website is www.jetsaris, J-E-T-T-P as in Peter, S as in Sarah, A-R-I-S as in Sarah.com. And everything I do is there. And everyone is also welcome to email me, jet@jetsaris.com. There's a way to do that through the website as well. The book is Hidden Blessings, Midlife Crisis as a Spiritual Awakening. And I also have an online course which takes this material at much greater depth. And that's called Taking the Midlife Leap, One Step at a Time. That goes into much more detail. And then I teach workshops and do talks like this conversation with you. And we'll be having more talks since the book has just been announced.
And Jet, what parting advice would you like to leave with us today?
Well, perhaps that fearlessness is overrated. Value fear as it is really the guide to full living, and to know that anything that is shaking us up is shaking us up to enlarge ourselves. I use a metaphor that if you think of a teaspoon of salt placed in a very small cup, that a cup of water, that cup of water will taste terrible to us. But if that same teaspoon, that teaspoon of fear, is placed in a lake, we don't even notice it. And so our work in the second adult life, midlife being the start of that, is to become lakes. And so fear is helping us do that.
That's excellent advice and something to take some time and meditate upon. So thank you.
Thank you, Billy.
I want to let also know, too, that Jet has donated a copy of her book, Hidden Blessings, which we'll be giving away. So if you would like an opportunity to win, visit the giveaways page at livingbeyondyourfears.com and submit your free entry form today. Jet, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today and just explaining a little bit more about fear and this process and period of our lives, well, for those of us going through it. So... I do. I want to thank you for coming on and just sharing your wisdom and your knowledge and just being really generous with us today.
Thank you so much, Billy, and thank you for the work that you're doing. I deeply appreciate it.
Thank you for joining me today. And remember, you cannot achieve everything, but you do have the God-given ability to achieve anything. So stay focused, out of fear, and keep on keeping on. Until next time, be well and peaceful. For more information on today's episode and guest, or for resources that will assist you in overcoming your fears, visit livingbeyondyourfears.com. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast, where 3 times a week we move to a life beyond our fears.